I'll start again. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can everyone hear me okay? Is that picking up on the... Yep. Good, thank you. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel meeting this afternoon. My name is Robert Montgomery. I'm the chair of the panel. This is a panel which is constituted under New South Wales planning legislation, and the purpose of the panel and the purpose of this meeting is to hear public submissions, so to hear from members of the public and applicants in relation to certain applications that are before the panel, and also to provide independent review and decision-making on behalf of the council. My background is in town planning. Have some 38 years' experience in local government, state government, and private practice. I currently run my own planning practice. I've previously held various executive and planning positions in state and local government. And currently, I'm an alternate chair and expert member of this panel, and I'm the same on Lane Cove and Bayside Council panels. I'll just ask each of the other panel members to introduce themselves, and then we'll talk about how the panel operates. Mark.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Mark Harlon. I'm a planning expert on this panel. To give you a bit of background, I'm also a planner of 30 years' experience. I'm a planning expert on this panel and Wollondilly's planning panel.
My name's Helena Miller. I'm a director of MG Planning, also a town planning consultant. I've got 29 years' planning experience, and I'm also on the Campbelltown local planning panel as well as this panel. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Tina Christie. I'm the community rep. I live in the local LGA. Thanks.
Thank you. There are three items on the panel tonight. Just to let you know that the panel has inspected the sites this afternoon. We've read the reports, which you would have seen on the council's website, and we've been provided with copies of the submissions made by the submitters. We'll hear from submitters first, and then we'll hear from the applicant's representatives, and we'll deal with the matters item by item. The way it operates is that you have 5 minutes to speak. The council staff have a timer. When you hear a tone, you'll know that your 5 minutes is up, and I'll ask you to quickly summarise and conclude your submission. Don't be concerned if we allow applicants more time than 5 minutes, because the panel expects the panel expects that the applicants will be able to respond to issues that may have been raised by submitters. We'll ask you to please show respect to other speakers by listening in silence, and also advise you that the meeting is audio recorded for the public record. So please, when I call your name, if you'll come up to the table at the front, speak nice and clearly into the microphone so your comments are recorded. Following the public part of the meeting tonight, we'll close the meeting. The panel will deliberate, make its decisions, and those decisions will be published on the council website, usually within 3 working days. Just before we start, I'll ask each panel member whether they have any conflict of interest to declare. Mark?
No, I have no conflict of interest.
Helena?
No conflict of interest.
Tina?
No conflict of interest.
And I have no conflict of interest. Just for information, the panel also signs a declaration which goes on the public record to record the fact that we don't have any conflict of interest. Okay, the first item we have is 2 Coast Street, Thirroul. We have 3 speakers, a written submission, and then the applicants. So, Jake Green, on behalf of Julianne Green. And if you can, thank you. Start with your, when that blue light's on, you're live. Start with your name and address, please.
My name's Jacob Edward Green from 16A Seafoam Avenue, Thirroul.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, members, Chair. Before I address some of the individual concerns raised in respect to the proposed development, I want it to be brought to everyone's attention that's present that Council has received at least 15 unique submissions by way of objection in relation to this proposal. 15 objections were received in relation to the proposed tree removals on the site, 13 in relation to the subdivision of the property, 14 in relation to a construction of a dual occupancy on the site, 11 in relation to the number of stories for one of these proposed premises, 12 in relation to site drainage, 10 in relation to the proposed private open space, 11 in relation to traffic safety, and 8 in relation to the proposed development not fitting with the current and future character of the area. These are amongst other various concerns raised. In my opinion, to have these number of unique objections received in relation to the plethora of concerns raised in a low-density residential area with the number of inhabitants and therefore the number of people that could object to such a development is expected to be relatively low, is only resounding evidence that the general consensus amongst the local community is that the development raises significant concerns and is not wanted. The first concern that I will address specifically is the proposed tree removal. Within the arborist report submitted to Council, within this introduction, it becomes very clear that the report is primarily concerned with supporting the proposed development first and foremost, and then the preservation of trees and the local environment second most, stating within this introduction that this report discusses the viability of these trees based on the proposed works. Surely one would assume that the correct purpose of such a report would be to evaluate the effect of the proposed development on tree species and to attempt to minimise the effect of development on these trees and their longevity. Concerns arise especially in respect of tree number 12 within Council's addendum, 16-metre tall magenta lily pili, a threatened species and a tree which, by virtue of the report's own admission, is indigenous to the Illawarra, has a high amenity value and is an exceptional specimen which is consistent with the local environment. Yet this tree sought to be removed as the development in its current state is not possible if it were to be retained. It is also identified that the crack referred to justify the tree's removal is only on one of the tree's 3 litres, and there is only a risk of 1 litre failing. However, the report goes on to identify that the opportunity to mitigate exists. Nevertheless, the report suggests this tree's removal. The assessment of the tree as an A3, C4 soil rated and medium stars rated tree requires a level 3 assessment to actually determine this accurate rating, and that's a foreshadowed part of that report. Therefore, the report seeks to remove a tree which requires a further more detailed assessment, which should be completed prior to its removal. Tree number 20, whilst it is suggested to be retained, has a tree protection zone, as it is a lemon-scented gum. Its tree protection zone is 7.2 metres, and the proposed development will encroach into this tree's tree protection zone, as the distance between this tree and the proposed buildings is a distance of approximately 3.9 metres only. So it may have the ability to adversely impact this tree to the point of its demise. Further, removal of tree 21, which species has been estimated only, but in either event is considered a threatened species, is a completely baseless request based upon the requirements of the proposed development and an unfounded allegation that it was planted. At the very minimum, a complete, further and accurate assessment is required in respect to this tree, in my opinion. Then moving on to this proposed subdivision of the property. The proposed subdivision is only permissible under Clause 2.16 of the Wollongong Local Environment Plan with development consent. So in essence, in order for this proposed development to occur, the applicant requires consent of this council to subdivide the property in the first instance and then also to subdivide the second lot further upon construction of the dual occupancy, thereby subverting Clause 4.1 by virtue of Clause 4.14C. By consenting to same, council is identifying that its future intentions for the low-density residential area is to allow for overdevelopment of the area by allowing for construction of dual occupancies and subsequent subdivisions on all properties within the area. It will set a precedent. In fact, this may even lead to the current applicant further seeking to demolish the current property on the front lot and to construct a further dual occupancy in the other front lot of the property and to further subdivide this lot, therefore leading to 4 properties and the possibility of 3 double-storey properties on the same parcel of land, where only one single-storey building currently exists. It is, if this were to occur, each of these 4 lots would be well below the regular minimum subdivision lot size per Clause 4.1 of the WLEP, and thereby utilising that 4.14C exemption. It is my belief and the general consensus amongst the immediate community that the construction of the dual occupancy is a concern and it will detract from and is not consistent with the existing character of Thirroul and the desired future character of the locality. A further concern voiced by the local community is the number of stories for the proposed Unit 2B. Pursuant to Clause 4.3 of the WLEP, an objective of the height of building provisions is to ensure that buildings and public areas continue to have visions of the sky and receive exposure to sunlight. It's believed that construction...
Sum up in 30 seconds.
Yes, yeah, sorry, Chair. So, in summary, in relation to that last issue of the double storey, the exemption is sought without addressing each of the objectives contained at Clause 4.1.1 of the WLEP, WDCP, and it also is based primarily upon the assertion, a false assertion, that an adjoining property to the east is actually two storeys, when in fact the garage level of that property has been built below the pre-existing ground level, so would not be considered double storey, would be considered split level. Thank you. Members?
Thank you. The next speaker is Ian Green.
Thank you, Chair, and panel members for the opportunity to speak, and thank you for your inspection of the site today. My name is Ian Green. I'm the landholder to the east of the proposed development, 16A Seafirm Avenue, Thurl. Our family has been residents of Thurl for over 30 years, in the current property for 10 years. I'll briefly go through 6 points of objection. Some of those points Jake has gone into a great level of detail. I'd like to give an overview. The issue of the second story, as Jake said, I don't believe there is precedence to allow a second story on a battle axe block in the area. I would like to see the evidence of a supposed pre-occurrence of that, or the precedence. I don't believe the proposed development should be allowed, that the exemptions that have been put forward, I don't think, stack up in the public interest. You saw today the magnitude of the size of the site. There is a great amount of potential overlooking of our site. And also from our yard, every single point of our yard is... looking onto the side silhouette of that building, and it's very large. Considering that the western edge of the property is very high, there's a fall of the land of about 1.3 metres, it appears in silhouette similar to a 2.5-storey building, not 2-storey. So I would wish that the panel would take that into consideration, the gross appearance of it from our yard and the fact that it's seen from every single part of our yard. Drainage, I've raised before an issue with drainage. There is an existing drain and easement on the western side of our property. I would wish for the panel to check the drawings for our particular house and the details on that drainage easement, because there is a stormwater line running underneath the property and the proposed development, which is not represented on the drainage diagrams that are in front of you. So that's a gross omission, and there is a massive flood risk of building upon those storm lines. Small lot size. I think the developers are using a very sneaky way of getting around the council's minimum lot size for subdivision of 450 square metres. They're using a legal loophole with this dual occupancy and divide later. And council, quite frankly, is teaching, allowing the dog to chew the carpet and doing nothing about it. There needs to be a recognition that this is a sneaky method of overdeveloping sites, and it's not within the intent of the regulations. Unit 2A, private open space. There's an issue there in that the deck on the eastern side of this proposed property is within 4 metres of a rear bedroom window of our property. That dramatically affects our lifestyle. Our building went through the basics rating procedure during its approval. All of the natural ventilation is based on northeasterly winds through a living room window and through the bedrooms. To shut those bedroom windows due to noise on the adjacent deck would affect our lifestyle. Tree 20 has already built up. It's already been raised by Jake. There is a building within 3.9 metres of that tree, and that encroaches on the tree protection zone of 7.2 metres. My final point is consultation. I've got a problem with the balance of consultation. The way I see the residents' ability to comment on this project, we were given a letter back in September. We had to submit our submissions within 5 calendar days, and our next opportunity to speak is here, 6 months later. There's been no consultation back with people who have raised objections, and council has allowed or recommended variations or exemptions in this particular planning exercise, and not even referred those supposed exemptions back to the people who have raised the objections. Developers, on the other hand, they've had constant consultation with the council. Developers have had ongoing negotiations, consultation with the council since February of 2018, and I think that is a very unfair situation. I don't think the consultation process is balanced. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Just before we hear from the next speaker, I just wanted to make a couple of comments in response to some of the things the last speaker said. Firstly, and I'm sure the applicant will have something to say about this, but firstly, I think it's a bit unfair to be accusing someone of being sneaky when all they're doing is using the rules that are laid out in the planning controls. So I just think that was a bit of an unfair remark. In relation to consultation, my understanding is that the application was notified to adjoining owners who were given a period of 14 days to respond. That's the standard. That's the council's rule. So I don't know why you only had 5 days, and I'm sure the council would have, if you had have contacted the council, if it wasn't enough time, I'm sure they would have been able to extend it. You've had... Okay. In relation to, and you've broken my train of thought, in relation to the notification, that's set out in Council's Development Control Plan, and my advice to anyone who is not satisfied with that process, they need to be asking the Council to reconsider its control plan, because all the Council was doing was following the rules. And the last comment I want to make is that Mr. Green made a comment about not being advised about the council proposing to allow contravention of development standards. Well, the application proposed that when you saw it. Nothing's changed as far as I'm aware. And it's a recommendation only, and that's why you're here tonight, and that's why we're here tonight. I just want to make a few things clear, because it's very easy for people to get up and say things, and if they go unchecked, you know, they're taken as being, you know, the truth sometimes. Yeah. Yes. There was also an independent arborist report in relation to the trees that was commissioned by the council. So the council shared concern about the trees, and they weren't prepared to accept the applicant's arborist. So they commissioned an independent review, and that the decision in relation to trees was based on, or the recommendation in relation to trees was based on that. Next speaker is Hedemo Santana. you'd tell us your address, please.
Yes, I also thank the panel for allowing us to speak. I am Edmund Santana from 8 Seafoam Avenue in Thoreau. So just two or three houses from where the proposal site has been. I am Edmund Santana of number 8 Seafoam Avenue in Thoreau. I'm here today representing myself and my partner, Alan Cooper, who could not attend the meeting because of a business commitment. Our first concern with the proposed development application is that there was no consultation about it. We inquired with our neighbors from number 6, 8A, 10, and 12A about the development, as it would affect everyone living on Upper Seafoam Avenue. And like us, none of them were consulted about it, either by the council or the developers. Of main concern to all residents is the increase in the local traffic that such development will create. I have here photos taken just last weekend that shows how congested the corner intersection of Seafoam and Coast Street gets on a regular basis. I'd like you to see that. Cars are parked on the corners of the street while vehicles race down Coast Street. For those driving up Seafoam Avenue, we feel that it's just a matter of time when accidents will happen. The proposed development in that location will only increase the risks. Developing a two-story and a one-story on the rear of a Battleax block does not fit with the local landscape. I have also taken photos here during the past during the past 8 years where I live there. I have documented the local flora and fauna. The bushland environment where we live is a sanctuary for a variety of birds, lizards, snakes, and marsupials. Thoreau does not need overdevelopment, such as seen elsewhere. Lastly, I'd like to remind you, the panel, of our common heritage, particularly if you look at the escarpment from Lawrence Hargrave Drive. On page 84 of Kangaroo, a novel written in Thoreau by D.H. Lawrence in 1922, there is a reference to Verdun. Verdun refers to one of only three house names that D.H. Lawrence chose to describe in his novel. The cottage was located on the southern corner of the Waves and Seafoam Avenue, a stone throw from where the development is proposed, if you pardon my poetic exaggeration. The proposed development is a far cry from the sparse huddle of freestanding bungalows, homes described by J. Lawrence in Kangaroo. As it occupies an elevated site, it will dominate and spoil views of the town setting back to the escarpment. What Lawrence in his novel of Place, where Thoreau predominates under the pseudonym Malambimbi, called a vast, dark, tree-covered tor on page 86. This is our common history, our heritage. We implore to you not to turn our beloved Seafoam Avenue into a copy of brickworks. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you be able to just come and show the panel where you live? I just can't. I think you said 8 Seafoam.
Seafoam. Yes, just 4 of our houses.
So this is the property here. That's Coast Street, and that's Seafoam. Whereabouts are you? You're up here on this.
That's the section
of the. Oh, so you're that corner property?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. We have a written submission from a Mr. Dean Franklin that's been provided, sent I think today or yesterday to the council. It has been provided to all panel members, so. I'll just place on the record the fact that we have received and read Mr. Franklin's submission. Before we ask the applicant to speak, is there anybody else here who didn't register who wants to speak in relation to this matter? No? Okay. So Steve Hughes and Kate Lynch. Thank you. Just before we start, I'll ask Mr. Carlon to say something.
Thank you, Chair. I declared I had no known conflicts of interest in this matter. I didn't realise that Kate Lynch was part of this proposal. I'll just, for the benefit of the committee, point out that Kate is a resident of my street and is known to me, but I have no pecuniary or non-pecuniary interest in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Carlon. As Chair who's responsible for managing conflict of interest, I confirm that I don't believe it's the sort of conflict where Mr. Carlon needs to excuse himself. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Steve Hughes from Develop My Land. When the owners of the property came to us with the idea of doing something with this block of land, they were very keen on addressing needs within the community, and I guess this addresses an important notion of community, and requested of us a solution that addressed what it was that the community was looking for. Now, we have a distinct shortage of low-maintenance, smaller dwellings in Thirroul, as backed up by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And what we've sought to do here is come up with a sensitive design solution that addresses the requirement to try and improve high-quality, compact accommodation in the suburb, whilst also recognising the sensitivity of the site and responding to the various influences that it is subject to. So the original application, or the original pre-lodgement application, was quite different to the submission that's in front of council today. We responded to the pre-lodgement commentary regarding loss of privacy, and tree loss, and we've come back with a scheme that we believe is a lot more sensitive in response to council's comments. The bulk and scale has been reduced, the tree loss has been reduced, and the proposal is highly respectful of privacy of adjacent neighbours. In terms of the big picture of the development, we have a two-storey and essentially a single-storey dwelling proposed. A variation's sought for the second storey of Unit 2A, which is permissible within Council's LEP and indeed the DCP objectives for the number of storeys are met. In terms of the requirements of the proposal that's here today. We are proposing the loss of six trees, all of which are either introduced species or in poor health. And that leads me to the comments from the community today. Jake Green talked about the arborist report, that it was a biased report. I would suggest that it's not a biased report. It's an independent report prepared by a consultant. I think the notion that just because you pay a consultant to come up with a report means that they are then somehow required to give you what you require is incorrect. That the independence of that report and the opinion of that report is confirmed, as you've already mentioned, by the second report that was undertaken by council. In terms of the magenta lily pili, there is a major structural defect, and it would be a very brave arborist who would be able to warrant that tree is safe. There are certainly safety implications to retaining it, and consequently the arborist is of the view that it should be removed because of the implications, obviously. The reason that this whole thing has been raised is because of development proposed on the site. In terms of subdivision, at the end of the day, this is a permissible proposal that we have before us. It fully complies with council's requirements in that regard. Building height's been mentioned. Ultimately, we are seeking a second story. It's set back significantly. And if you actually look at the form of the building, you'll see that in terms of the overall height, it would not be dissimilar to a single-story dwelling with a pitched roof. We're still more than 2 metres below the 9-metre height limit. And in terms of the windows that are impacted on the neighbours to the east, in terms of having a dwelling there at all, you will see that in terms of a view line, because we have this the upper floor set back, that effectively there's a minimal impact. Ian Green also mentioned the second story. We, as I've mentioned, we do indeed meet the intention of the DCP, which is all around visual amenity of the area. We benefit from a number of mature trees on the site, which mitigate and ameliorate the skyline so that the dwellings proposed sit down below the level of those trees. Potential for overlooking of adjacent dwellings. The upper floor has high-level windows to minimize overlooking. The private open space area has a screen, and then beyond that we have landscaping. So the privacy of the dwelling to the east has been very much considered, as indeed it has to the west, because that also primarily has high-level windows on the area that's proximate to the adjacent dwelling, whereas further to the south we do have some full-height windows, but there's no danger of any loss of privacy there. Ian Green also mentioned loss of privacy. I've just talked about that. Mr. Santana, he talked about traffic. A great benefit of the proposal that we've come up with is that the traffic will be able to enter the site in a forward and exit the site in a forward manner. So one could say that there's actually a net improvement as a result of this, because traffic will be able to very much more easily assess the state of the traffic on the road and then make their decisions accordingly. Mr. Santana also mentioned overdevelopment. I would say that we are compliant with FSR comfortably, also setbacks. So I don't think we can be accused of overdevelopment, because the site, the proposal comfortably sits within the DCP requirements. I think that's as much as I need to say at the moment. I think I've addressed all of the main issues. Of course, if you had any comments or questions, I'd be pleased to answer them.
Thank you. Just a clarification. I know the other panel members do have some questions, but you mentioned that this two-story component, the two-story building,
yep,
is set back a considerable distance.
Yep.
What did you mean by that?
So the upper story of Unit 2A is set back from the side boundary. I think it's 4.5 metres from memory. So it's, 4.5 metres from the side boundary and about 5.7 metres from the adjacent dwelling.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
So just to start with, I had a question about the access. So in terms of, there's a turning bay which is proposed at the front of the rear dwellings, but it seems to straddle the boundary. So I'm not sure between the front lot and the rear lots. I'm wondering why that boundary isn't pushed forward so that actually that turning bay is located wholly within the rear properties.
Are you talking about the gravel
turning bay?
Yeah.
Yes. I think it's
the... as a result of the number of trees that we're retaining at the back, it became a case of having to come up with that solution. Why do you see an alternative solution?
Just to relocate the boundary, the rear boundary of the front lot, further away, further to the north, so that turning bay is wholly located within the properties.
There's no reason why we couldn't do that.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. The other question I had is around the non-compliance with the height, the two-story height. So the dwelling, the westernmost dwelling, Unit 2B, is single-storey, mm-hmm, and obviously has the garage cut in. I'm wondering why you couldn't take a similar approach with Unit 2A, which would then ensure that you complied with the council's control in relation to two-storey, and also potentially could reduce the bulk of the building when viewed from the neighbouring property to the east.
It's a big fall across the property, as you've seen, and, yep. and it's retained. The garage at the low one is at natural ground, and during the pre-lodgement it was requested that we keep as many as possible of the existing stone retaining walls. So we tried to keep the garage at the lower one at the level of the top of the retaining wall through there, and then there's just not such a great fall across the bottom part of that lot. The big fall is at the top part where there's the high retaining wall near the magenta lily pilly. So we've put the top one at that high bench, and that's what gave us the opportunity to put the garage in at a lower level. So to do that would mean we would have to excavate down, such as the neighbours done. They've put a garage underneath and excavated.
So it could be done.
It could be done, yeah, but I guess all of these things ultimately become a balance of trying to find the middle way between coming with something that's not massively invasive on the site in terms of, cut and a huge amount of material that have to go off-site. And then, okay, well, if we try to take that approach, look at what are the implications for the neighbour, and I think we have come up with a solution that retains the neighbour's privacy.
Yeah, I'm not talking about privacy. I'm actually talking about bulk and scale in the rear yard of the neighbouring property, and particularly given that there is a control that it, dwellings in Battle Axe Block should be single-storey, not two-storey. So if you were looking at an alternative, I gather it is a possibility that it could be single-storey.
So I might just say vehicle manoeuvring becomes tricky as well. But
I guess that's also related to my question about the location of the boundary between the front lot and the rear lot. So if you move that boundary further to the north, then you could potentially have alternative manoeuvring arrangements at the front there.
I'm trying to protect. We've got the tree at the back as well, so we've got a lot larger back setback than what we're required to do to protect us beneath the trees in the rear. So you're saying move the whole development?
Well, alternatively move the building to the north or do a similar approach to what you've done in 2B, where it's single storey, so that actually then you don't have such an imposing impact on the property.
Yeah, so we did.
I guess it's related also to what. So is there an intention that the front lot would become a dual occupancy as well?
I couldn't comment on that at the moment. We've just been commissioned to do this. Okay.
So
work.
I'm just wondering if that's why that rear boundary is located where it is, as far back as it is.
The parking for the front residence is an issue, vehicle parking. So that's driven that to some degree. You're absolutely right that boundary could easily move north, and we can easily accommodate that. I do have concerns in terms of being able to make this central manoeuvring area work if part of it is going to be ramped down, so that then manoeuvring out of Unit 2B would be compromised, and I'm not sure how that would work, because you're going to be having a ramp down to a basement garage effectively, or a semi-basement garage for Unit 2A.
The rear of 2A is already quite substantially in the ground anyway, so towards the rear of 2A it's excavated in.
Yeah,
no. It's about 1.2 under natural ground.
Yeah,
level there.
Although if it was single storey and you did a similar approach to 2B, it wouldn't need to be excavated as much. You could have a similar approach where you have a subfloor, couldn't you?
Potentially, but you're still going to have a ramp down to the garage, which would compromise your manoeuvring area. We'd have to look at it in detail. We did go through the exercise early in the piece and found that it was very difficult to get that manoeuvring to work.
Right.
It might be that both dwellings actually have to move north so that you still get your manoeuvring area, but you maintain your basement down into the new 2, whatever it is, 2A. I don't know, it might not just be...
Which could potentially also result in a better separation from that tree that you're trying to maintain and the tree protection zone. But would also mean that the rear of that building would line up more with the rear of the adjacent existing development to the east.
Not, I mean, I'm not saying exactly, but at the moment you've got something like 8 or 9 metres. You're actually stepping back 8 or 9 metres behind the rear of that property adjacent to the east.
Yeah, I mean, I'm struggling a little bit to see. So I acknowledge that we've got a structure there in terms of the impact on the neighbour. What's your concern that it's the bulk of it?
The bulk and scale, given that it is already elevated and it's two-storey, so it doesn't comply with the control. So if it was single-storey, there would be less bulk and less impact in terms of being overbearing on the neighbouring property.
It's been a visual intrusion.
Yeah, visual intrusion.
Or potentially the building on 2A was moved to the north, and I know you can't sort of manoeuvre it, but if the building on 2A had the same alignment as the building on 2B, the impact on the property to the east would be very minimal, because the property to the east, the walls are not blank walls, but they're walls and windows that don't look there, but so the main visual impact on the property to the east is from the rear yard and from the private open space. If that building was forward,
yeah.
This constraint is leaving the building in that location and the trees in the rear.
Yeah. All I could say is we'd have to look at it in some detail, I guess, rather than trying to answer those questions now, but it's certainly something we could look at.
I share that concern about the visual intrusion from the rear and the,
For the benefit of others, I shared that concern of the visual intrusion from the property to the rear. When you've got a single-storey height limit, I think you have to work harder to justify that. I think you have addressed it in terms of privacy, Tig. You know, it's a sensible solution in terms of not having particularly active windows on that edge and sitting them back 4.5. But because that site next door is so far below, the visual prominence is even greater. And I think they have a fairly reasonable expectation to see a single-storey building there. So I support Helena's comments. I understand the issue with trees, and I've been through all the arborist reports, and I agree with the conclusion that council has come to. I think the independent advice on the magenta lily pili was worthwhile council getting. It does verify that situation, and there is a lot of potential for plants here and for the retention. There is a hedge shown along the boundary to the property to the east. There's no reason why that couldn't be extended the whole way as well to improve that relationship. One only minor issue that I saw on site at the boundary under the magenta lily pili, there's a large big rock floater probably on the lot next door, but that really needs some geotech advice to make sure that that stays where it is when you're doing the subfloor for 2B. I think that needs to be looked at. But I understand the solution to this site and where it's come from, but I do support Helena's point that you've taken an arbitrary boundary line, and if you consider moving that to the north, you've got more than 3 metres to play with just to come to the car parking space for the front property.
Yeah.
And that, if that's given to the back, that then takes that area of sensitivity, lining it up more with the adjoining dwelling to the east. And that deals a lot with that visual intrusion, because when you're coming out the back of the neighbour's house, rather than looking up at it, it's beside. And beside is a more normal relationship in a suburban context.
Yeah, we could look at that. Yeah.
Helene, you had another question?
I just had a question which related to what one of the objectors said about a drainage easement across your site. Or was it across...
There's various stormwater drains on old existing on site, but obviously the new scheme would address those requirements.
I'm not aware of a legal easement over the property.
There's no easement.
It's on your property, not on their property.
The scheme's been designed so that it's independent of any.
We might ask
easements.
Council if they've got a survey plan that they can show us that shows. Yeah, okay.
Can I see the photograph?
The survey.
It's not
I've just got a question with the eastern elevation of that unit 2A. On the back where the dining room is, you've got a window there. Is there, again, this comes back to the issue of privacy because that window will be looking straight into the neighbour's properties. Is there anything that can be done with that window?
That can quite easily be made a high-level window.
Yep.
It's not really an issue. Yeah.
Okay. Just because it's from a dining area.
Yep. Yeah, it's got a sliding door facing north as well, so it would be adequate light if it became a smaller window.
Okay.
Oh, I was just looking at the drainage point. Doesn't show an easement. Well, it doesn't show the adjoining property. No.
Yeah, so the stormwater design has been put together so that it drains to the street without requiring entering any other property.
I can see that. Yeah. So there's a number of pits down the proposed driveway.
I think the neighbour's saying that there's a existing stormwater pipe or easement that goes on the back of your property already, and the proposed buildings are over that easement, so we just need to have a survey that identifies where that is.
There's
not affected by an easement in the contract.
There's no easement on the subject property to my knowledge, and certainly looking at the survey plans. So
it's certainly something that needs to be investigated. Because I was once so bold here to say to someone like yourself, there is no easement, because all of the information said there was no easement, but it turned out it was created in a very odd way, and there was indeed an easement where all of the legal documentation said that there's no easement. So it's an issue. It can be an issue, and if you're saying that there's something there that does drain water, then we need to be 100% sure that we're not. If it's approved, that's not going to impact on that. Or if it's not there, then deal with it the way they need to deal with it. Okay. Any other questions?
I don't believe.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That concludes item one. People that are here for item one, you're welcome to stay, but there's no need to. There'll be no further discussion on your item. As I mentioned, our decision will be on the council's website usually within 3 working days. So keep an eye out on the website. Thank you. Item 2 is 151 to 153 Princess Highway, Corrimal. We have no speakers registered. Nobody here to speak on that one? No? Okay, we'll move on to item 3. Nobody left except Ms. Wright. One person, Oasis Caravan Park. So, Kayleen Wright, would you like to? Now, I guess before you speak, I might just put on record the unusual circumstances that you find yourself in.
Yes.
Because on my list here it says that you're speaking on behalf of the applicant, but in essence you're not.
No, it's
because the applicant was a previous owner of the land who's since gone, doesn't have any interest in the land anymore, and the application that owner lodged, you effectively inherited it when you purchased the property.
Yes.
However, you don't have any rights, if you like, to that application in terms of you're not the applicant. Those rights weren't signed over. I just wanted to place that on record that obviously, as the owner, you have an interest, of course, in this application, and whatever decision was made, that approval or refusal, whatever it may be, sits with the land, not the applicant. So, but I think it's fair to place on record that you are in an unusual circumstance in relation to this application.
Thank you, Chair. My name's Kayleen from Seven Friar Place, Albion Park. I'm here on behalf of my boss and the Oasis Caravan Park. Originally, we were going to ask for an extension, and we still would like to ask for an extension based on the fact that we are the new owners and we haven't had time to really assess what needs to be done towards the DA. We inherited a lot of problems with the Oasis Motel as far as we had residents in there that weren't supposed to be there. It took us a long time to get them out and with renovations, and it's only recently that this DA has come up onto our desk, basically from Sean, the owner. So it's still, we would like to extend the DA if possible, but the refusal points, I suppose, are something that we can't comment on today. We can't give you solutions or anything as far as guarantees that we'll be able to do the things that are on the refusal proposals. But we are very committed to getting the DA approval, and if we do have to put in a new application for a DA, then we're willing to do that, obviously. And we will do that if this is refused and our extension is refused. Yeah. I don't think...
Any questions?
No, I think...
Yeah, we had a fairly good discussion on the site, so...
Yeah.
And you've made it fairly clear to the panel members on site too today that that you are happy to work closely with the council
to achieve
compliance and whatever you need to achieve out there to be doing the right thing. So we acknowledge that.
Yeah. Just a question to the panel. The refusal that will go on record, would that affect our business, our the residents in any way? It doesn't mark it, like it's not a bad mark against our name or anything. Is that, I'm not familiar with the process, that's
look,
all.
From a legal point of view, no.
No.
The council would be within its rights to seek compliance in the absence of an approved development application. My advice to you, as I gave you on site, is that regardless of the outcome of tonight, I think you need to write to council very quickly and express your willingness to sit down with the relevant council staff, work through the issues and work towards a new application of whatever may be required to sort out the issues which you've inherited on that site. I think it would certainly would be unreasonable for the council to race out there tomorrow and take action, particularly when you're saying to the council, we want to talk to you and we want to work with the council to get this right.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming out there today too.
Okay, well that concludes item... and I'll formally close the meeting at 6 p.m.